We're going to have a break. We're not going to 3:30 without a break. So don't panic. All right, let's turn to page 64. Actually, I'm sorry. Let's turn to page 63. The very bottom of 63. Is that my water over there? Yes, thank you. I didn't know if I drank it or not. Okay, and we have two new readers. We have...
My name is Bruce, and I'm alcoholic.
I'm alcoholic. My name is Jeff.
Hi, Jeff. Okay, and I'm going to just remind our readers to try and really read into the microphone so that everyone can hear you. And we're going to start off with Bruce, because Bruce is walking through fear. He's up here. And we're going to start out at the very bottom of 63. Next, we launch.
Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted, though our decision was a vital and crucial step.
Now, what decision is that we're talking about? Step three. Good.
It could have little permanent effect unless it once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom. We had to get down to causes and conditions. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four.
Okay, so this says, though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once. So if you have a pen, underline at once, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves that have been blocking us. So basically, that's telling us that if we don't immediately start on step four, you've wasted your time with the first three steps. You know, you need to start on step four immediately. But that's only according to the big book. Okay, go ahead. What's the big book now?
A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its uncommon manifestations. Resentments is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not been only mentally and physically ill, but we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations which had been interfered with?
Okay, I want you to get to your formats and take a look at your formats. We're not going to do anything on them, but I just want you to take a look at them. You can take a look at this one if you want. And on this format, there are four columns on resentment. Now, in these pages, if you just try and do your inventory by looking at this format, you're going to miss out on a lot. You have to read all these pages, page 64 to 71, and it tells you how to do your inventory. And it's going to tell you that you have to do three inventories. You need to do an inventory on resentment, you need to do an inventory on fear, and you need to do an inventory on sex. So that's three. And if you just look at this format, you can't see this. This format looks like it's just about resentment. And it makes it look like we're just going to blame other people. You know, I'm resentful at Mr. Brown. You know, and then you go and you read further on and it says, okay, now you've got these three columns. Now you have to go back to it and you have to add another column. Now we have to look at our part. And we'll talk about that a little more when we get to reading it. And I know if you've been to other book studies, because I go to book studies all the time and I learn and stuff, and there are lots of book studies. I know in some of them they add a fifth column, because in the sixth inventory it says, what should I have done instead? And I'm adding that on the format under the sex inventory, because that's where it's been in here. But it really doesn't matter whether you have, to me, the four columns or the five columns, as long as you're really looking at your part. And the one thing that we'll do that I suggest on this, because they say that this is your inventory, Now, I know what Joe and Charlie used to have. I love Joe and Charlie. And they used to have checklists. They had these three inventories, and then they had these checklists. And on these checklists, you just check stuff like self-esteem or security or personal ambitions, these things that we just read here. You just checked it. And then in the fourth column, the things it said was your part, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightening, inconsiderate. So you just put little checks. And that really worked good for people. But then they went into this five-column thing, and then they went in, you know, as they've evolved a little bit with their formats too. And then they even added another page where the page says harms done others. Because when you look at this, you're kind of missing the stuff that you've done to other people. Here, when we get to the fourth column and we're looking at our part of a resentment of somebody who's done something to us, but you kind of miss the fact that we have to also list those things that we feel very guilty about, like my being a thief. People who've never done harm to me. So the way I was taught to do it so that I covered those items, and the way I have my sponsorees do it, is we do it under the resentment inventory. And that's the first thing I do is I put, I'm resentful at, and the person I'm resentful at is myself. And then I go to what's the cause? Why am I resentful at myself? And in the next column, I would have, because I'm a thief. And then the next column, how does that affect me? And I go up to these things up here that we just read. It affected my self-esteem. It affected my security. I was afraid of getting arrested. It affected my ambitions. It affected my personal relationships. I used to steal from people I was sleeping with, and it really affected those personal relationships. Well, that covers sex relations, too. So I had to put those things. And then in the fourth column, what was my part in that? Is my part was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened of getting caught, inconsiderate, five-bagger for sure. And then I had to put, I'm resentful at myself for what? The cause, prostitution. The third column was, how did that affect me? That affected my self-esteem. That affected my security. It affected my ambitions. It affected my pocketbook. And it affected my personal relationships and my sex relationships. It affected all those things. And what was my part in that? Same thing, selfish, dishonest. That's a very dishonest act. Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, inconsiderate. Inconsiderate of myself. So sometimes that inconsiderate doesn't just mean inconsiderate of other people. Sometimes inconsiderate can be inconsiderate of yourself. But we're going to go ahead and read this now that I've talked about putting yourself in the resentment list first, getting all the things you feel guilty about down first. Let's take care of, this is our inventory, let's take care of ourself first, and then we're going to list the resentments of people that we're resentful at, other people. So go ahead and read this little, it's, what was your name?
Jeff.
Bruce and Jeff. Okay, we'll let Jeff read the I'm resentful at, the cause, and affects my.
I'm resentful at Mr. Brown. The cause, his attention to my wife, affects my sex relations, self-esteem, fear. I'm resentful at Mr. Brown. The cause, told my wife of my mistress, affects my sex relations, self-esteem, fear. I'm resentful at Mr. Brown. The cause, Brown may get my job at the office, affects my security, self-esteem, fear. I'm resentful at Mrs. Jones. The cause, she's a nut.
I love that one.
She snubbed me. She committed her husband for drinking. He's my friend. She's a gossip. Affects my personal relationship, self-esteem, fear. I'm resentful at my employer. The cause, unreasonable, unjust, overbearing. Threatens to fire me for drinking and padding my expense account. Affects my self-esteem, fear, security. I'm resentful at my wife. The cause, misunderstands and nags.
A story. We waste no time. We have a written inventory, and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. We should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character and every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe.
Okay, so this tells us that a lot of people, after doing steps 4 and 5, is going to feel this huge spiritual relief. This huge, and also I want to point out that most people approach them this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. Some people are afraid to ask somebody to sponsor them, and they're afraid to ask for someone to listen to their inventory. They're afraid they're bothering them, or they're going to take up their time, or they don't have time for them. And the truth is, it's an honor. When anybody asks me to sponsor them or to listen to their inventory, somebody shared something with me this afternoon, and I just felt so honored. I mean, it was an honor, and it was a privilege that somebody shared that confidence with me. And most people feel that way in this program. It's an honor when you want to... if you ask for help, it's an honor for someone to ask you for help. And as this paragraph says, I did not experience this. Our fears fall from us. I never did experience that. I mean, it might have fell from me for a little bit, but then it jumped right back in. But thank God we've got 10 and 11 that covered me. But a lot of people get a feeling of total release when they do 4 and 5. How many people got a total release from 4 and 5? I'd say a third of the room when they did 4 and 5. I never got any release, any freedom, anything from this program until I did my first amends, when I got into my steps. And how many never got that spiritual release until they got into step 9? Okay, it's about equal. About the same amount of people got that spiritual release from 4 and 5. And here it says often. I believe it says often. Yeah, okay. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. Now, that did happen to me right away, that the drink problem had disappeared. I just didn't get that spiritual release and that feeling of that nearness with my Creator until I actually got into step 9. Okay, this is the paragraph where I'm going to have to go into more explaining about why I do things the way I do. In this paragraph, it says, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. Carefully reviewing what we have done, we thank God from the bottom of our hearts that we know Him better. Taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. I love Bob O. I don't know if you've ever heard any people have heard Bob O from Colorado, but he talks about this sentence, taking the book down from the shelf, and he says, okay, first I got to go back and put the book back on the shelf so he can do it exactly according to the big book, so he can take the book down from his shelf. And that just tickled me when he said that, because I know my book is never up on a shelf. But I was told by the people that sponsored me that home is in the heart. And as we read earlier, and maybe we'll read it again, I think we'll go ahead and read it again later on, that in the days of Bob and the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, the sponsor did step 6 and 7 with you. They did not send you home to contemplate on your own character defects. So the part that's coming up, I have whoever I've just listened to their fifth step, I have them go into my AA room and I have them sit quiet for an hour. I have them take this book down from the shelf. I have them put it up first, and then I have them take it down from the shelf. No, I just have them take this book, open it up to page 59, and look at those first 5 proposals, and ask their Creator, you know, if they've truly taken each one of those 5 steps, and if they've left anything out on their inventory. And I'd say half the time when I come back into the room to them, they have added something that they have forgot, that God has revealed more to them in that hour. And then half the time they feel like they did a thorough job. Go ahead and pick up where you left off.
Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. Carefully reviewing what we have done, we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skipped on the cement that we put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand?
Okay. Go ahead. Next reader. Go ahead and read on step 6.
If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something, he will not let go. We ask God to help us to be willing.
Okay, let's turn back to 292. Let's take a look at those steps again, the way they did it in the original days. And one thing I want to point out about Dr. Bob, boy, I love Dr. Bob so much, is Dr. Bob said, let's keep this thing simple. Let's keep this thing simple. Let's not louse it up with Freudian complexes that are interesting to the scientific mind but have little to do with our actual AA work. And he really believed in keeping this program simple. And Dr. Bob was much more successful working with drunks than Bill was. Bill never got one drunk sober until he got together with Bob. And then they got a group together in Akron that started getting sober. And Bob continually was getting people sober when Bill was struggling in New York. So Bob's simplicity was very powerful. It was very powerful. Okay, let's go ahead and pick this up Wednesday, Dr. Bob's afternoon off. We read this earlier, and we're going to read it again. Is it John's turn? Oh, God. You know, and this didn't just happen today. This has happened since I first met you the other night. I keep calling him John, and I don't understand it. I think it's because you're David. And I keep thinking that you're David, so he's got to be John. I'm sorry. I apologize. Okay. David. Two Davids. Okay. David.
Wednesday, and Dr. Bob that afternoon off, he had me down to the office, and we spent 3 or 4 hours formally going through the six-step program as it was at that time. The six steps were, 1, complete deflation. 2, dependence and guidance from a higher power. 3, moral inventory. 4, confession. 5, restitution. 6, continue to work with other alcoholics. Dr. Bob led me through all these steps. At the moral inventory, he brought me up some of my bad personality traits or character defects, such as selfishness, conceit, jealousy, carelessness, intolerance, ill temper, sarcasm, and resentments. We went over these at great length, and then he finally asked me if I wanted these defects of character removed.
Okay, and this is what I really like. We went over these at great length. They just didn't brush by him, and they just didn't say, oh, God knows what my defects are, and when he's ready, he'll remove them. They identified these character defects, and they went over them at great length because they really believe that you're going to drink over your character defects. You know, but I was also told that your character defects are going to be removed in the exact order that they're interfering with your life, because in that order, you're going to be willing to address them. So, you know, we can't get perfect overnight, and it's a long process. You know, it's a long process, and when I get rid of some character defects, new ones pop up. Go ahead, David.
When I said yes, we both knelt at his desk and prayed, each of us asking to have these defects taken away. This picture is still vivid. If I live to be 100, it will always stand out in my mind. It was very impressive, and I wish that every AA could have the benefit of this type of sponsorship today. Dr. Bob always emphasized the religious angle very strongly, and I think it helped. I know it helped me. Dr. Bob then led me through the restitution step, in which I made a list of all the persons I had harmed and worked out ways and means of slowly making restitution.
Okay, so let's go to the... I know you guys probably don't have 12 and 12s with you. Does anybody have a 12 and 12 with them? Okay, I'm just going to read a little bit out of the 12 and 12 on step 6, because when Bill wrote this book, he was in a hurry to get, especially that part, how it works, written. And that's why, have you ever noticed two very important steps in Alcoholics Anonymous? There's only two paragraphs. Have you ever noticed that? And they're two very important steps. But he really expands on them in the 12 and 12. And even though I am a big book thumper, I know that the 12 and 12 really does enhance the big book. And my favorite steps in the 12 and 12 are step 6 and step 10. Those are my favorite steps in this book. For me personally, trying to do an inventory out of the 12 and 12 just doesn't work. I mean, for me personally, and that might work for other people. And I know there was a group at the time, a little before I got in the program, people were really upset with the big book and Bill and all this stuff, and or not the big book and Bill. They were upset with a Clarence Schneider movement and all that stuff, so they just started using this and not the big book. You know, but to me, to try and do a, especially back in California, there was a group that only wanted to use in 12 and 12 because they were really upset with this group that was against their traditions and everything. But that's an outside issue. So let's turn to step 6. If you happen to have your 12 and 12, does anybody have a 12 and 12? Okay, Jill has one. Okay, well, I'll just read a little bit out of the 12 and 12 under step 6. It says, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. So declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of AA's greatest friends. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step 6 on all his faults without any reservation whatsoever has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own Creator. So this is telling us that we need to repeatedly try to address those character defects. Of course, the often disputed question of whether God can and will, under certain conditions, remove defects of character will answer with a prompt affirmative by almost every AA member. To him, this proposition will be no theory at all. It will be just about the largest fact in his life. He will usually offer his proof in a statement like this. Sure. Did I miss a paragraph? No, I didn't. Sure, I was beaten. Absolutely licked. My own willpower just wouldn't work on alcohol. Change of scene. The best efforts of family, friends, doctors, and clergymen got no place with my alcoholism. I simply couldn't stop drinking, and no human being could seem to do the job for me. But when I became willing to clean house and then ask a higher power, God, as I understand him, to give me release, my obsession to drink vanished. It was lifted right out of me. In AA meetings all over the world, statements just like this are heard daily. It is plain for everybody to see that each sober AA member has been granted a release from the very obstinate and potentially fatal obsession. So in a very complete and literal way, all AAs have become entirely ready to have God remove the mania for alcohol from their lives. And God has proceeded to do exactly that. Having been granted a perfect release from alcoholism, why then shouldn't we be able to achieve the same means of perfect release from every other difficulty or defect? This is a riddle of our existence, the full answer to which may only be in the mind of God. Nevertheless, at least a part of the answer to it is apparent to us. When men and women pour so much alcohol into themselves that they destroy their life, they commit the most unusual act, unnatural act, defying their instincts, desires for self-preservation. They seem bent upon self-destruction. They work against their own deepest instinct. So he's saying that alcohol, drinking alcohol, is not a natural instinct. As they are humbled by the terrific beating administered by alcohol, the grace of God can enter them and expel their obsession. Here, their powerful instinct to live can cooperate fully with their Creator's desire to give them new life. For nature and God alike abhorred suicide. But most of our other difficulties don't fall under that kind of category at all. Every normal person wants, for example, to eat, to reproduce, to be somebody in society of his fellows, and he wishes to be reasonably safe and secure as he tries to attain these things. Indeed, God made him that way. He did not design man to destroy himself by alcohol, but he did give man instincts to help him stay alive. It is nowhere evident, at least in this life, that our Creator expects us to fully eliminate all our instinctual drives. So far as we know, it is nowhere on record that God has completely removed from any human being all his natural drives. Since most of us are born with an abundance of natural desires, it isn't strange that we often let these far exceed their intended purpose. When they drive us blindly or we willfully demand that they supply us with more satisfaction or pleasure than they possibly are due us, that is the point at which we depart from the degree of perfection that God wishes for us here on earth. That is the measure of our character defects or, if you wish, our sins. If we ask, God will certainly forgive our derelictions, but in no case does he render us white as snow and keep us that way without our cooperation. So here it's telling us that we've got to do our part. We can't just assume God knows what our defects are and he'll remove them when he's ready, that we have to cooperate with him. We have to do our part. That is something we are supposed to be willing to work toward ourselves. He asks only that we try as best we know how to make progress in building a character. So step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, is AA's way of stating the best possible attitude one can take in order to a beginning on this lifetime job. This does not mean that we expect our character defects to be lifted out of us as the drive to drink was. A few of them may be, but most of them we shall have to be content with patient improvement. The key words entirely ready underline the fact that we want to aim at the very best we know that we can. So this is telling us, as you read further on, that a lot of our character defects are natural instincts that have gone amuck, and God cannot remove a natural instinct. Have you ever had a defect of character that you just can't figure out? I mean, I have a defect of character with food. I have a real problem with food. And God cannot get in there and remove my instinct to eat. It's a natural instinct that he has given me to survive. Fear is a natural instinct that God has given us to survive. And so some of these things cannot be removed. And it says that sometimes we have to just settle for patient improvement, but we have to do our part. We have to bring them in line with God's will for us. We have to use these instincts in the way that they were given to us to use and not to exceed the usage of them. And some of those instincts are sexual instincts, greed. It'll talk in here. It says gluttony. He nailed me. Gluttony to the point of being ruinous to your health. In this chapter also, he says greed to the point of being a thief. He mentions all kinds of things that are natural instincts that we have gone amok with. So what we're going to do now that we know that we can't just say, okay, God knows what our defects are and he'll remove them when he's ready, we're going to just work a little bit on our defects, and we're going to just kind of make a little list on what defects are. And if some of these defects are yours, claim them. If they're not, don't claim them. We're just going to give you a little idea. Now, they just gave us an idea right here what defects are. They said bad personality traits or character defects such as selfishness, conceit, jealousy, carelessness. So we can list those. And do we have somebody who wants to write some of these on the board? How about David? Do you want to write some on the board?
You're not going to be able to read them.
Clarissa, I can see you're just cringing. Okay. Okay, why don't you get your paper if you have a pencil, and if you'll look in your format, we've got, after step five, we've got this format that shows you. It's divided in half, and it has defects of character. So we're just going to list, so you have an idea of what defects of character are. Some of them are very obvious, and some of them might not be. And then what we're going to do after we list these character defects, we're going to say the seventh-step prayer. And if you want to list all of them just so that you have a list to work with your sponsors, you can do that. And if you want to do this for yourself, just write the ones that you're claiming. Do whatever you want with it. But after we make this list of defects of character, what we're going to do is say the seventh-step prayer and ask God to remove them. And then on this other side, we're going to list things that we can do to help God remove the defect. You know, like if you have self-pity, you can do gratitude lists. You know, there are certain things we can do. We can work towards the opposite to help God remove the defect. And there are some things that are very hard that there's not a lot we can do. And then we have to just really get there and repeatedly say that seventh-step prayer and hope that God will remove it, because some things are much more difficult than other things. Okay, so let's get all of you to scream out. I need a pen. Does someone have a pen I can borrow? Okay, then I'll give you this so I can help. Okay, if you can see on your list, the first one it says is fear. So God can't remove fear. We really should have put, you know, in some of the books, I think it's as Bill sees it, he calls it unreasonable fear. I used to call it unhealthy fear, and somebody challenged me, so I went back to the literature that Bill wrote. Jill helped me with that, and Bill called it unreasonable fear, because fear of somebody stabbing you is a healthy fear. Fear of drinking is a healthy fear. We're talking about unreasonable fear, the kind of fear that paralyzes you. You know, so fear, so you can write that one down, and it says the opposite of that. To help, after we say the seventh-step prayer, one thing we can do to get out of fear is walking through fear and practicing faith and works. Always getting out of yourself and helping another person can help get you out of that fear. Self-centeredness, the opposite of that would be God-centered. When you know that you're really into self, try and think of God. You know, try and say a prayer or something. You know, you can take your focus and think of God instead of yourself. But let's just list some. First of all, we've got fear already on here. We have self-centeredness on here. What's other ones that came out in that fourth column? How about selfish?
Controlling.
Controlling's a good one.
Jealous.
Great.
Unrealistic expectations.
Okay, unrealistic expectations of others.
Self-righteous.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay, self-righteous, perfectionism,
intolerance.
Okay. Impatient. Anger. Prejudice. God, you guys are coming up with some good ones. Dishonest. How about manipulative? Oh, no, we want to keep that one. Okay. Anybody have any others? Sarcasm. That we just... Was that Jill? Jill, did you say sarcasm? The queen of sarcasm, her and David. Okay. Okay, wait. Okay, gossip.
What was that?
What was another one? Some people had some good ones back there. What was another one besides gossip?
Later on, procrastination.
Somebody else had one back there.
False pride.
False pride. How, that would be like ego. Good. Lust. Oh, it was so funny. I gotta tell you someone this. What was it? Somebody came up at one of our workshops. The character defect was over sex, and so when we were putting the opposite, the character defect was frigid, and so someone put for the opposite to work towards being over sexed. So that's not quite the way we do it. Envy. Envy's a good one. To me, there is a difference between envy and jealousy. Jealousy is like being jealous of a woman talking to my husband. To me, that represents jealousy. But envy is for me, and it might be different for you. Envy for me is wanting something that other people have. I envy them, and it's fine to admire them, but to envy them and want what they have, you know, there's a little bit of difference there.
Greedy.
Greedy. Good. How about thief?
What is
thief?
Lion.
Great. Okay. Lion.
Denial.
Gluttony. Oh, that's good. That's in the 12 and 12.
How about people, please?
Good. That was number one at the very top of my list, self-pity.
That's not the same as selfish?
Self-pity and selfish? No. No. Self-pity is pour me another drink. You know, it's just feeling so sorry for yourself. Selfish is trying to get what you want. Dishonest. We have dishonest. Who said defiant?
The
defiant one. Okay. I'm sorry. What? What? Spiteful?
Did you?
Prideful. Yeah, we have false pride. Ism. Like. Ism's a good one. So you just go from one ism to another ism. Is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking about alcoholism? Or okay, how about compulsive spending?
Oh, yeah.
Compulsive spending. What did you say? I think that would fall under self-centered. And there is another word for that, too. Attention-seeking?
Yeah.
Okay, attention-seeking. I'm sorry, what was that?
Who's...
Oh. How about smoking? If I have to claim... If I have to claim overeating, you guys have to claim smoking. Yeah, we said gluttony. Gluttony's overeating.
I thought you said that was a natural instinct.
No. Eating's a natural instinct. Gluttony is to the point of being ruinous to your health. So you still list it as a defect if it far exceeds its natural, what it's intended for. If it exceeds what God intended it for, sloth. That's a good one. Huh? We got procrastination. Huh? I'm sorry, what'd you say? Hypocrisy? Can't even say it.
Grandiosity.
Hypocrisy. Grandiosity. We got that one. How about judgmental? We do? Do we have judgmental?
No.
Nosy? Did somebody say nosy? That's a good one.
Gambling,
that's a good one. I'll tell you, I speak at conventions all over the world, and the conventions that are held in Las Vegas, Laughlin, Biloxi, every place they have gambling are the biggest AA conventions there are. They barely make it to the speaker. Everybody's in there. Yes. Gambling. Only if gambling is to a fault and not entertainment. You know, everybody knows if it's a defect. So we'll say compulsive gambling.
How can addiction be a character defect?
No.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're not saying that alcoholism is a character defect. So
I'm saying alcoholism is a disease.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Smoking is a disease, so is gambling.
No, gambling, compulsive gambling is a defect. Now, addiction, any drug addiction, to me is, I mean, to me personally, when I was abusing diet pills, was a defect. Now, say if you smoke one or two cigarettes a day and it's not hurting your health, then maybe it's not a defect. You know, maybe if you're a social smoker. Are there any social smokers? Jack the social smoker? All right. Okay. So if you're a social smoker, it's not a defect. You know, so don't claim it if it's not a defect. You know, and if you don't want to get rid of it, don't claim it. If you're really comfortable with it and you don't think it's going to hurt your health and God's fine with it, you and God are fine with what you're doing, putting in your body, don't claim it.
Right. If we're honest with ourselves here, we just ask ourselves, is it getting in the way of my relationship with my husband, my children, my higher power,
right. My health.
Ask
yourself, you know if it's interfering with your life. That's what I'm saying. These defects, we're just listing them and you don't have to claim them. They're just, if they're interfering with your life, like Bill Wilson died of emphysema. He tried really hard to quit smoking. Chuck C., these are my heroes in AA, died of emphysema. He really tried hard to quit smoking. They considered it a character defect. And I'm not putting down smokers. Believe me, I have no business putting down smokers because I got defects up the yin-yang. So, I mean, we're just identifying. If you want them removed, God can do it, you know, but you're going to have to help him and you have to claim it and you have to ask him. So if you don't want it removed, you don't have to put it. Don't worry about it. You know, you'll know when it's time. So we'll just work on the ones that are interfering with your life. Right now you're just getting a list, so maybe you can help other people with it. So this is not a big deal. You know, this is not a big deal. We're not saying everyone here has these. You might only have one or two. I personally had 24. So I am a sick puppy. And I'll tell you, the sicker you are, the more they love you in AA. Okay, so now we have a list, and I'm just going to read some of these. Exaggeration, embellishment, exaggeration, that's good. If you do it all the time and it's a defect, you know if it's a defect. So let me just list some of the things I have in my fast shorthand that I can't read. Grandiosity, we have that if I can find it and read it. Okay. Oh, critical, we forgot to put critical. Shame? Critical and judgmental, they can be the same thing. But Bill said it's okay to make a judgment. I mean, you know, when you do it to the point of being, like, I judge the winners. I judge who has what I want. But to sit there and criticize who doesn't have what I want, they're just, you know. So you know when it's a defect and when it's not. And some of these are similar. You know, some of them are, and some of them have just a little degree of difference, and you'll know what applies to you and what doesn't. So let me just list some of the ones we have is defiant, compulsive spending, sloth, attention-seeking, selfish, controlling, jealousy, expectations, unrealistic expectations, self-pity, no, the self-righteous, perfectionism, intolerant, impatient, anger, prejudice, dishonesty, manipulative, sarcasm, gossip, procrastination, false pride, lust, envy, greedy, thief. I wrote half a smoking because you guys got so upset. I just forget that one. I cross that off. Lying, denial, gluttony, people pleasing, self pity, shame, criticism, hypocrisy, grandiosity, judgmental, nosy, compulsive gambling. So that's just a few. If any of you want to know what some character defects are, now. If any of you have, take your number one character defect right now, you personally, what defect take a defect right now that is interfering with your life. Actually, if you're doing this with your sponsoree, we have their list and we're doing it for the whole list. And God will remove them in the exact order that they're interfering with your life and in the exact order that you're addressing it and doing your part. You have to help God a little bit here. This is a partnership here, you and God. You know, the alcoholism is not a natural instinct and he can just remove it. But some of these other things, like I have to do some things to keep me from being 325 pounds like my daughter. I have to do some things. I have to do my part. I just can't keep shoving the food down and say, oh God, please don't let me be fat. You know, I just can't. It just doesn't work that way. So, okay, so let's stand up. If there's any particular character defect that you're working on, just kind of think about it in your head and ask God right now gently to just, this is the defect you want to work on, or if you have a bunch of them you want to work on, tell God to, you know, just talk to your higher power as you understand them. Let's stand up. We're going to hold hands again, and we're going to say the seventh-step prayer.
Okay, now this is going to take me.
You will have a problem.
All right, Deb. That's poise.
All right, does everybody have hold of somebody's hand? There's not an empty hand, right? Don't break the chain. Okay, there's power in numbers, and there's just power in this room. Okay, and I'll say it line by line, and you repeat after me. Otherwise, this many people, it really gets out of sync, and nobody knows where you're at. Because it's not like the Lord's Prayer. My Creator.
My Creator.
I am now willing.
I am now willing.
That you should have all of me.
That you should have all of me.
Good and bad.
Good and bad.
I pray that you now.
I pray that you now.
Remove from me.
Remove from me.
Every single defect of character.
Every single defect of character.
Which stands in the way.
Which stands in the way.
Of my usefulness.
Of my usefulness.
To you and my fellows.
To you and my fellows.
Grant me strength.
Grant me strength.
As I go out from here.
As I go out from here.
To do your bidding.
To do your bidding.
Amen.
Amen.
That's not optional. It's in the big book. Okay, everyone, quietly take your seats. Now, have any of you ever noticed that in the big book, on the third step prayer, it does not say amen? The seventh step prayer says amen. I personally think from studying the history, this is just my personal opinion, which means nothing, is that that was just an oversight of Bill's. But I'll tell you what somebody told me, and I thought it was really cute. They said that's because the seventh step prayer is just a continuation of the third prayer, and that's why it comes after the seventh step prayer. So anyway, I thought that was kind of neat. All right, so now we're going to take a look at the other side, and we're you know, you have to have, when something's removed, God's going to have to replace it with something else. Now, some of our character defects, we might hang on to them if they're not interfering with our life, and God can still use you. Maybe he can use you in that character defect. Maybe he'll take that character defect and turn it into an asset. I mean, God can do all kinds of things, but let's just take a look at some of these things and see what we can do to help God remove the defective character or do our part to help him. Okay. How about selfish? What would be the opposite of selfish? Giving. Yes, being generous, giving, selfless. You can write any of those down. And that we have a little bit control over. How about controlling? Accepting. Practice acceptance. Let go and let God. Say the serenity prayer. How about jealousy? What would be the opposite of jealousy? I think so. I think also, yeah, I think also the opposite of jealousy is confidence, security. When you're feeling good with yourself and you have a relationship with God, you're not jealous. You know, I just don't feel those feelings, you know, with my husband. I just don't have those feelings. And believe me, he's with lots of women lots of times. When I first met him and I went to this restaurant, he says, how come I see him with all these women and I never see him with you? You know, and that's because he's just a father image to a lot of women, you know, He's free to do that. He's free to go be the best he can be, and I'm free to go be the best that I can be. There's no jealousy there between us. How about unrealistic expectations? What can you do? What can you do to help? Pray for acceptance, accepting people, places, and things. And turn around and look at yourself.
Let go.
Let go. Let God. And turn around and take a look at yourself. And remember, we disregard the other person's faults entirely. You know, unless it's causing us harm.
Honesty.
On the opposite of unrealistic expectations, yeah. That's good. You know, on trusting, on unrealistic, trusting is an interesting thing. You know, because I have people that I sponsor that just really want to learn to trust people. You know, the only thing you can really trust is God. You know, that people are human, and we're not all the time 100% trustworthy. You know, I mean, not even your sponsor. There's going to be times your sponsor might fail you because they might be going through their own stuff and can't even hear you or not be there for you and let you down. You know, that's why we have a support group. This is Alcoholics Anonymous, and we need a support group. I know some people sponsor, and they don't want them calling anybody else. You just call your sponsor. I feel like you need a support group, because if your sponsor's out of town, you better have a support group to call. And this is not Michael's Anonymous. This is not Mary's Anonymous. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. And I trust the process. I trust the steps. I trust God. But sometimes, you know, the book says we'll intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. And sometimes I felt that when you don't have that trusting feeling, that maybe there's a reason for it. You know, if you've thoroughly done your steps, you're living this program, and you're doing the right thing. If you're coming in here and that's a phobia, and it's because of old baggage, that's different. You know, if it's old baggage and that's why you don't trust anybody, anything, or the process of these steps, that's different. But once you're in these steps and you're thoroughly doing these steps, sometimes you might get that intuitive feeling not to trust somebody. And sometimes you have to go with that. I have experienced that. So that's why I'm afraid to tell people to pray to trust everybody. You know, especially in AA, we don't get here because we're wrapped tight. You know, and this is not the place to just go up and trust everybody. You know, just, you know, really watch people who walk like they talk. And I really need to see them walk, because I know a lot of people who talk the talk that don't walk the walk. So I really try to watch people, and those are the people that I want to emulate and be like. Those are my heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous. What was the next one?
How about separating your wants from your needs from that expectation?
Your wants from your needs.
Separating your wants from your needs for high expectations.
Okay. Is that being the opposite? You mean, is that being the opposite of unrealistic expectations? Sit down and separate your wants from your needs? Yeah, that could work. Yes?
I have an interesting question. For myself, I guess I don't, expectations is my
defect. Well, some people, but I think it's, I mean, for me, I think it's fair to have some expectations, just like in a relationship. I expect my husband to be faithful. I don't think that's unrealistic. I think that's why God brought us together. So that's an expectation I have of him and he has of me. And if that doesn't happen, I'm out of here. You know, that's just the way it is. You know, so but that might be a real trigger for you, any kind of expectation. So you just have to know for you what works, because that's one of those things that's a gray area. And a lot of these things are gray areas. You know, and I talked about that a little bit last night when I was talking about spiritual things. Sometimes what works for me might not work for you, and sometimes what works for you might not work for me. You know, so it's a gray area, and you just got to, your higher power is going to reveal it to you. You just take this set of actions. Okay, what was another one? Self-righteous? How about God-righteous? Perfectionistic? How about balance? Because it does say we strive for perfection. You know, in the 12 and 12. How about balance? Intolerant? The opposite would be to practice tolerance. I got to tell you the story about this person who was impatient, so he prayed to God for patience. You know, be careful what you pray for, because he kept ending up with situations where he had to practice patience, and it just about drove him up the wall, you know. And so he finally decided that was not the thing to pray for, you know, because he was tired of trying to have to practice patience. But the opposite, or some way you can try to be more patient when you know you're impatient. You know, if you're driving and somebody's just really making you mad on the road, you know, instead of flipping them off, just say the serenity prayer, or say God bless you, or there are things you can do to practice patience. Taking a set of actions contrary to the way you feel. Okay, what's another one? Anger. What can you do? Now, anger is a hard one. That is a real hard one to not feel. So the one thing that you can do about it is address it. You know, address it when you're angry. Write about it. call somebody, talk about it, get it out of your system. You know, that's one thing that you can do. You know, there's some steps we can do on anger. And some of our defects of character we can actually apply the steps to. Say, I'm powerless over whatever the defect is and do the steps on it, if it's a defect that's really interfering with your life. Okay, what's another one? Dishonesty. Practice honesty. And that's another gray area. There are sometimes when we're talking about rigorous honesty in the big book, it's talking about rigorous self-honesty. It is not talking about brutal honesty. To just go up there and be cruel to somebody in the name of honesty is not what we're talking about. Making amends that could really hurt somebody, sometimes generic amends are best. You know, you don't want to be telling them stuff that they don't already know that might crush them. You know, that's why sponsorship is so very important. What was one of the other ones? What's one that somebody wants to throw out that they want to... Sarcasm? Complimentary. Does anybody know what the definition of sarcasm is in the dictionary? One of the definitions? Tearing of the flesh. That's caring of the flesh.
Gossip,
the opposite would be restraint of pen and tongue. Prejudice, yeah, I would be practice love and tolerance. It's our code. It says that in the big book. Love and tolerance is our code, and we're going to be reading about that later on. Love and tolerance is our code. Yes, what did you...
Procrastination.
You know what I would do? I'd pray for motivation. When I'm really procrastinating, sometimes I'm paralyzed. I just give it to my higher power and I say, God, you're just going to have to give me the motivation. And I'll just actually say a prayer for the motivation. So the opposite of that, what you want is motivation to help get you out of that procrastination.
Vanity.
Vanity, like conceit, humble. Practice humility. Self-pity, the opposite would be gratitude. Practice gratitude, right? Gratitude lists.
People pleasing.
Don't say self-pleasing, please. The opposite, and what you can work for people-pleasing, if it's a character defect, because thank God for people-pleasers, because they're some of the greatest people in the world that help people, are people-pleasers. And so I would say God-pleasing. Lust, the opposite. The opposite of lust would be balance. Yeah, work towards balance. Viagra. No, yeah, that induces lust. No Viagra. I should tell Leon's joke. I can't even... I'm not going to tell Leon's joke. Oh, my God, no. This 84-year-old guy who has umpteen years of sobriety in a meeting here in Maine told the most awful joke. Okay, about Viagra. Okay, what's another one? I was shocked sitting next to the spiritual giant who just came up with this foul joke in a meeting. Manipulation. Okay, that's a good one. What would be the opposite of manipulation? It could be acceptance. It could be let go and let God. God's will. Praying to know God's will and the power to carry it out would be something you can do. Ego, you know, you mean like false ego or false pride? Humility.
Judgmental.
The opposite of judgmental would be acceptance. Practicing acceptance. Open-minded. Mm-hmm. What's that? Envy. Envy would be admiration. It's fine to admire people. It's fine to want to be like somebody, but it's fine to admire them, but not to envy them and covet what they have. Critical of others, acceptance.
What, defiant?
Greedy would be generous. Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Thief would be honesty. What did you have over here, honey?
Defiant.
What would be the opposite of defiant? Huh?
Reliance,
good. Obedience. Disciplined. Sloth, the opposite of sloth would also be motivation. Praying to God for motivation. Yeah, the opposite of manipulative was God's will. Let go and let God's will. The opposite of guilt, you know, I don't know if we put guilt down. We put shame down. So what would the opposite of shame be? Acceptance? Acceptance, dignity. But I want to tell you something about guilt. in the big book, we're going to read this later on, too, in step 11, it says that we have to be careful not to get into remorse or morbid reflection, for that diminishes our usefulness to others. But guilt is a very useful tool. Guilt keeps us from repeating behaviors that hurt other people, and guilt keeps us from repeating behaviors that hurt ourselves. You know, guilt is not a bad thing, but if we get into remorse or morbid reflection, then it is, then it diminishes our usefulness. And I know sometimes for me it does. I have been riddled with guilt for the kind of mother I was. So, appropriate guilt. You know, just praying not to get into remorse or morbid reflection, morbid guilt. Okay, does anybody else have anything? Lying? Truthful? Good denial? Question. Don't even know I'm lying. Self-pity is gratitude. We talked about doing gratitude lists. Compulsive spending would be appropriate spending. Balance. Balance is a big one. You're going to notice that balance and acceptance are going to be some key things here. Yeah, that's good. Savings account. Attention-seeking would be God-seeking. Greedy, we put greedy as being generous. False pride would be humility.
What do we have? Compulsive behavior.
Compulsive behavior?
Balance.
I think we all have that, you know, but we have to address them. I think we have to address each one at an individual time. Like I can go from compulsive eating to compulsive running, you know, to compulsive working, and when it's interfering with my life, then I have to address it. And that's, I just have compulsive behavior. That's just me. So it's, but I have to take it as it comes up. Yeah. That's a good thing, working for balance, at praying to God for balance. And a lot of this is just taking it and saying the seventh step prayer and asking God what's the next right step to do. What is the next right step to do in helping him remove this defect? What was your question, honey? Gluttony? Gluttony would be freedom or balance, appropriate eating, healthy eating. Put healthy eating. Practice healthy eating. Grandiosity, humility. A judgmental would be acceptance. Denial would be reality. Nosy, what would be the opposite of nosy? Minding your own business. Taking your own inventory. Sticking to your part and disregarding the other person's. Smoking would be non-smoking. 13th stepping. All righty, we didn't get to that one. Praying to know God's will and the power to carry that out. Compulsive gambling. If you're a gambler, I think you'd have to practice abstinence. If that's a disease for you, I don't think you can get into balance with compulsive gambling. I mean, just the people that I know that are compulsive gamblers, they have to work a program and 12 steps on it, and they have to abstain from it. I mean, it is a serious disease, and that's one disease that I totally cannot relate to because I just get pissed off when I lose a quarter in a machine, you know. So, I mean, I can't relate to it, but my daughter is a compulsive gambler, and she has to go to GA, and they practice total abstinence because she cannot control it. I mean, I have seen her. It's one of the, and she says how she describes this high she gets. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like alcoholism, as she describes. So I know for her, she practices total abstinence from gambling. She can't even buy a lottery ticket because it sets her off. Anything that we've left out that you feel that you might need to bring up? Go ahead. Denial? Reality. Grandiosity would be humility. Restraint of pen and tongue. Exaggeration would be honest, truthful.
Fantasizing.
That can be good and that can be bad. How about balance? Okay, let's see what time it is. Gosh, it's almost 6:30. You know what we're going to do? We're just going to keep going a little bit because I haven't got the signal yet that it's time to eat. So how many of you need a smoke break? Okay, let's do this. Go out. Let's take a 10-minute break, and if dinner's not ready, then we'll resume step 8.